You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest treats out there with for web development. We are going to do an awesome episode today on WTF is the edge. You hear this word thrown around a lot. Edge compute, edge functions, run it on the edge. What is the edge? That's what we're going to attempt to tackle and answer today. We are sponsored by three awesome companies today. Linode, cloud computing, Linux servers, hosting, they do everything. LogRocket, JavaScript session replays, and FreshBooks cloud accounting. I'll talk about all those awesome sponsors partway through. With me, as always, is Mr. Scott Tolinsky. How are you doing today, Scott?
Oh, I'm doing okay. Our whole family's been sick for like 2 weeks now. So that's been really great. You know, Brooklyn, like waking up in the middle of the night the past 4 or 5 nights in a row. She can't breathe. She's got a fever. It's like everything. And so kids are staying home again today for what feels like a long time.
Yeah. We just got through a week of that. And one of our kids didn't go to school the entire week. And it was just like everyone ended up on antibiotics and I got bronchitis and brutal. I hate it.
Yeah. So it's feeling a little rough this morning, but I'm getting through it.
Cool. We are switching up this recording. We're trying out riverside.fm because we're starting to do a little bit more guests on the podcast. And like we used to always ask guests to like record themselves and send us the audio. Which is okay. Generally, those people know how, but it's nicer to just have an app do it. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah. Do we have an announcement to make regarding that?
Yeah. I guess we could. Yeah. Because is this one going to come out before? Yeah, it is. So
yeah.
On Fridays, we are going to start, what are we calling it? Supper Club.
Friday Supper Club.
The Friday Supper Club, where we're adding another weekly podcast. So now we're going to have 3 episodes a week. And Friday is going to be guests. So we're going to have all kinds of interesting people just to talk to them. So I've always wanted to have tons and tons of people on the podcast, but we never really had a good system for it. Like, who should we let on and who should we not? And like, we probably get like an email every other day of someone that wants to come on, and we could do an entire episode every week. So it's nice just to have a whole separate day where we have people on and we can chat with them and ask them questions and whatnot. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. And just so you know that this isn't going to be, you know, Supper Club sponsorship hour either. We're definitely going to have people who are presenting interesting things and not selling you a product or something, because I think that's the way it works the best.
Case in point, there was a PR company emailing me for months trying to get Netlify on. And I was like, no, absolutely not. And then what's his name? Jason from Netlify is like, hey, can we get the Edge function guys on? Like, or not, can we? I'm like, I'm happy to hook you up. I'm like, absolutely. I love Netlify. Yeah. And so that's the dirty little secret is don't get a PR company to try to get you on the podcast. It doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work, at least for us. I think it probably turns us off from you, especially if we have personal relationships with people there. Like, it's funny that the PR company would reach out to us when we all have had so many emails with all of the folks at Netlify.
Direct line to the CEO.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's kind of true. And we get people like they do like a tour. They're on every single podcast. Yes. I hate that. That's awful. I just want the most interesting people. They don't necessarily have to be big names or people that have a book or anything like that. It's just people who are doing interesting stuff or people that can help us understand an aspect of tech that we don't necessarily know a whole lot about. So pretty stoked about having some. We got tons of really good guests lined up already.
Yeah. So you'll get a third Syntax in your inbox every single week on Fridays. And I'm super excited about that. All right. Well, let's actually get into the part of the show where we talk about the thing. So the edge. What is the edge? Why might you want to use it? What are the upsides? What are the downsides? How do you use it? Who offers it? All of those things and more. So I guess for the very beginning, we should get into the 101 here. We're talking edge. What does that mean for you? And what exactly practically does that mean in the real world?
Yeah, this is something that a term gets thrown around a lot, and you often are starting to see it in marketing companies, sort of alongside with serverless. But you're just like, what does the edge actually mean? And the edge in technology, edge compute, is running processing the request or processing the compute as close to the end result as needed. So the very closest way you can run something is literally on your user's machine. And then from there on out, if you don't necessarily can do it on the user's machine, then you can do it maybe on a server that is in the largest city close to them. And if you can't do it there, maybe you could do it on somewhere. And that's a little bit different than traditional servers where you just have one server or maybe a couple and maybe one in Europe and one in Canada. And then you'd run it on that server. So the idea with edge compute is put the processing as close as possible to the user. And we'll talk about why. Obviously, probably speed is the biggest one there, but we'll talk about why you might want to do that, as well as some upsides and downsides to it.
Yeah, and we're not, so if you're not thinking CDN, if we ignore a CDN aspect or any of that stuff, when you sign up for, let's say, an AWS server, right?
Yeah.
Or any type of server, right? Typically, it presents you with the location of that server. That's where that thing lives. And
yeah.
In the real world, that's where it's a computer running it in the world, and that from that location. And what we often don't think about with this stuff is have data that needs to go, you know, the user types in URL, you hit enter, that data needs to physically travel the distance from wherever that is to you. Now, things like caching and CDN can bring it closer to the user, but your server very well may be always just living in that distant spot. And believe it or not, everything feels like it's instantaneous, but there is some latency there inherent with either just traveling distance or the amount of stops it has to take before it gets to you. But we often don't think about that because everything happens so quickly, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of interesting that we've seen this for years on CDN world, where the CDN will distribute, like, you got an image and the CDN will put that on 6 or 7 servers around the world. And then when you request one of those images, it will figure out where the closest server that has that image is and bring it back to you. And you even see that with things like Netflix, where they will literally, ISPs will literally get a box that they install on their inside of their ISP. And it will do things like cache Netflix shows so that they don't have to do the bandwidth round trip, both in terms of speed and in terms of bandwidth. And now I've been seeing this edge functions over and over. And in the last year, you're starting to see a lot more frequently where, okay, of course we can do assets that are static or change somewhat frequently, but we can also do computing as close to the person as possible. So let's talk about some of the upsides first. The biggest one is that, there's time sensitive data that needs to happen inside of a, and if for the purpose of this episode, sorry, you should probably be thinking of edge functions as sort. You can think of it as like a serverless function.
Yeah, there's an individual function that runs.
Yeah, exactly. Like an example might be you have a smart plug, and you want to turn that smart plug on or off, right? There's a little bit of logic that needs to run inside of that function to figure out, okay, is it on? If it is on, then turn it off. If it's on, if it's not on, are there people who have the app open that need to show that is on and off? And are there other things that need to happen when this plug turns off? Is there a rule that needs to trigger? Like, right? Like that's a pretty simple idea of a smart plug, right?
Totally.
And generally, I've had several smart plugs, and some of them are fast as heck, where you push the button and literally 10 milliseconds later, the plug turns off and on and off. I'm like, wow, that's like super responsive. And I've had other ones where you push the button and 400 milliseconds later, it's still less than half a second, but 400 milliseconds is a lot, right?
Yeah.
And where that logic runs, does it literally run on your phone because you're on the same network as the plug, or does it have to go to Belgium run the thing and come back to your home and turn the plug on and off. So that is when I was doing a little bit of research for a show, that's kind of where I saw a lot more of the outside of the JavaScript world. That's where I'm seeing a lot more of the idea of this edge computing is in the Internet of Things world, as well as in, like, we had that show on heavy industry as well, where you have robotics and stuff.
That makes a ton of sense if you think about it, because like you said, it's a small amount of latency, but it is going to not feel good, especially when you compare it to how the light or whatever you're working with feels if it was not smart, right? You flip a light switch, you expect that light to go on instantly, but then you get into Internet of Things world, you flip the light switch and having to wait 400 milliseconds, it's going to feel weird. It's going to feel not natural. It's not going to, I can tell you that wouldn't necessarily fly in a lot of households. They'd say, why don't we just use the normal one that works? Like, I don't need to, these extra features if I'm sacrificing that weird delay.
Totally. You know, like when you go to a website or you get like a new piece of tech or like you get a new phone, that's probably the biggest one. It's like your old phone, like you never thought, this thing is slow. But then you get a new one, you're like, ooh, wow, like this is super responsive. This feels good. Like it feels good. And like, what is that? Well, that's somebody that actually cares about the time sensitivity between those types of things. And they've done the actual work and made that even faster. And it's definitely noticeable.
Yeah, totally.
Let's go through some of the other upsides as well. You want to grab the next one?
Yeah. So, well, we've mentioned really that it's fast, and that's really where most of the upsides come from, right? So it reduced is, it's funny that so many of the things that we have listed in our notes here for upsides are like the same thing. Reduces latency, fast as hell, close to the user. So all of those things are really what makes this fast is really you're closer to the user, so it has to travel less physical distance, but also has to make less stops elsewhere. Sometimes things have to be routed from one thing to the next. I'm not actually familiar with any of these cold start issues. So, one of the upsides here that you have listed, Wes, is that it's zero cold start. Would you mind giving an explanation as to what cold start is and why an edge function might make this better?
Yeah. So we had, if you want to learn a little bit more about cold start, go back to the episode where we had Brian LaRue on from begin.com and he explains like what cold start is and why it's getting better and better. So like, let's say you have a Node.js function that simply echoes hello world or console logs it and then shuts down, right? With a cold start, when you run a serverless function, what needs to happen is they need to go and get that code. They often need to set up a container that has the version of Node.js that you want inside of it. And then they have to fire that up. And they need to run, like you type node index.js, that takes a number of milliseconds as well. And then finally the code is running. And if that is all of the work that needs to happen before your light switch turns on or before a user is redirected or before a notification is sent to your phone, then that could be, again, we're talking about speed here, that can be an actual issue. And cold start is something that people are working on. And there's this idea of having warm images, meaning that like you, okay, like 5 minutes ago, I ran that serverless function. That thing is still warm, meaning it's still running. And if there were to get a second request within 5, 10, 15 minutes, then that's say, okay, I still have this thing all set up. I don't need to do the setup. There's no cold start. I can just run the actual code. But at a certain time, that's the whole idea with serverless functions is that, nobody's using this code base right now. There's no sense in using compute power to keep this thing running. We're gonna spin it down. That's a word we say often is we're going to stop it. We're going to spin it down. And then if somebody comes along in 6 months, this is often if you go to Heroku as well or things like that. If you're the first person visiting that website in the like that day or in a week, sometimes the first time you visit it, it takes a second or two to actually get going. And that cold start is something that people worry about a lot because it can be an actual issue. So the upside to using edge functions is that there is no cold start because it runs in an environment that is quite a bit pared down. And we'll hit that when we hit a downside. So generally, with most things in computing, the more restricted the environment that you run it in, the faster it is going to be. And that's the idea with this. And people talk about if cold start is actually an issue or not. So I'll leave that up to them. But that is one of the big benefits that is touted amongst edge functions.
Yeah. That's cool. You also have here that there's privacy concerns too, or it can help with privacy concerns, because what I'm guessing here is that it's traveling less places, less distance. It's only going to the edge. So therefore, you can run it in the same location as where the user is. That means that information is not having to travel outside of wherever you are, whether that information is encrypted or not. So I guess I don't know how much of a thing that actually is, but I guess if you're dealing with more of IoT-based stuff, seems like that would be a much bigger deal than sending an encrypted website, right?
Yeah, well, if you're running any sort of business where the information you are processing is highly sensitive, it can be really frustrating because, like, let's say the IRS in the US or the CRA in Canada, the people that work on these apps, they can't just go flip that thing on. It's probably a little easier in the US, but in Canada or especially other countries, you don't necessarily have those things available to you. And it's hilarious trying to book something on Government of Canada website, because they literally just, they just limit the amount of people that can do something at once, because they don't have they can't scale up to, I don't know, 10 million people wanting to do something on one day, and then a week later, zero people want to do it, right? And serverless and edge computer is really good at that. But you can't also just like send all of your traffic to the US and let the you guys spy on all of our data, right? That's a major issue. So often you have to keep your data running inside the same country because you have PIPEDA or personal information or whatever acts that are running in your country. So that's a big one for people, is being able to take advantage of it, but still run it within the same country.
You know, it's really interesting that it's somebody's job, Wes, to handle the scaling of things like the IRS's website, where like, you know, that the usage of the IRS's website has a huge peak and then, you know, falls off dramatically.
Yeah.
But I've never been on it once where it didn't work. So somebody's job out there is to scale things like that are so uneven, in which they get traffic. I know that's like a lot of things, right? You have a launch date, whatever. But I would imagine for something like the IRS or anything like that, that would be very dramatic and interesting to see.
Oh yeah, it was a major thing with COVID, because people needed to book vaccines or get testing, and like the demand of it just went up and down and up and down and up and down, and like, let alone scaling people, but the infrastructure in order to be able to book things and whatnot was huge.
Well, you might want to check out one of our sponsors today, which is Linode, the cloud computing that developers trust. Do you want to talk about Linode, Wes?
Yeah. Linode itself has a whole bunch of documentation on edge computing architecture and the different services on there. So Linode has the option to run computing in all kinds of different clouds. They have servers all over the world. And if you need to do it, then they are able to do that. So they have a whole documentation on their website. It says, edge computing explained. How does it work? You can read through it. It says, edge devices add flexibility in computing by virtue of many communication protocol options, which include Bluetooth, low energy, cellular, Ethernet, NFC, RFID, Zigbee, Z-Wave. So they obviously do that, but they do all kinds of stuff. Virtual private servers, Kubernetes, shared CPU, high memory applications, GPU, managed databases, MySQL, block storage, object storage, you name it. So check it out. For your next host, go to linode.com/syntax. That'll give you $100 in free credit, which is pretty sweet. Thank you, Linode, for sponsoring.
All right, next one. We did the upsize here, so we've learned that it's fast, it's more private, closer to the user, all of those things. What are some downsides of edge functions? Why aren't we running everything in the edge all the time?
Yeah, so we said earlier that the more constraint constrained that an environment is, generally the faster that it actually runs. So there's a reason why your heart monitor is not running Node.js and it's using low level, probably C or something like that, or even what are the other low level languages?
Rust.
Low level language, like assembly code or things like that. You know, like they're not running these compiled languages on there. And the reason they're doing that is because they are smaller, faster, they can work with less dependencies, right? And then at the other side of things, you have full environments like JavaScript where it's much more involved. You have to have a whole like a browser or Node.js and V8 running, but it's much easier to write JavaScript, right? Totally. So the idea with edge functions is that they run, all of the ones that I've seen, they all run in JavaScript. I'm sure there's environments for other ones as well, but they don't give you the full Node.js API. They give you a subset of JavaScript APIs where they're saying, okay, this is a constrained environment. The reason we do that is because you may only do these types of things which are fast. And if you need to do other things that are regular JavaScript and then that take longer, then you have to do that in a serverless function or a server rendered. We'll talk a lot about what they're used for and examples in just a second as well. So I've talked about this with Cloudflare workers in the past. That's probably one of the biggest implementation of edge functions out there is that Cloudflare workers, they have their own custom JavaScript engine, and it's intentionally pared down so that they run as fast as possible. But the downside to that is that you can't do literally every possible thing that you want. You can't NPM install 1,000 packages and set up everything that you want. You just have access to a certain amount of APIs. And what APIs are, though? Let me take a look. I'll send you the list here, Scott, so you can see. So what APIs do they have? They've got console, lotlog, A to B and B to A. Those are used for base64 encoding and decoding. Those are built into the browser. The whole fetch API, which is great because often what edge functions are used for is for intercepting a request, massaging that data, caching something, fetching some data, and then sending a response from that. Text encoding APIs, performance, web crypto API, which is for generating random user IDs, not for mining Bitcoin. WebSocket API, timers, streams. And then they also, I thought this is really interesting. Generally, all of them offer those ones I just said. And then some of them have like custom APIs added on top. Netlify built theirs in Dino. Did you see that, Scott?
I didn't see that. No, but I have, you know, it's funny because we did mention in our like recap of the year that Dino didn't seem like it had gotten any movement. And I'm the one who said that. So I'll take responsibility if that's not true. And what I have seen over the past like 2 or 3 months is maybe more Dino than I had seen like all of last year.
Yeah.
I was just seeing something this morning about speeding up prettier with Dino. And I was like, oh man, this is kind of neat. So, hey, Dino's popping up here and there.
Yeah, it was amazing because I was like, why would they use Dino for this? And the reason is because Dino is a server environment that has implemented all of the web APIs. So the idea behind these cloud functions is that you can just use standard web APIs, not Node APIs, not browser APIs, but web APIs, which are fetch and encoding and crypto and whatnot. And Dino has implemented all those. And on top of that, you can use TypeScript with any sort of build step either. So I thought, oh, that's actually a really good use case for Dino. So I was also notified by some people on Twitter that Supabase has edge functions and they are also running on Dino, which is really interesting to me. Yeah.
Yeah, Supabase. I always want to call it Supabase. Supabase. Okay. I also have in here for downsides, Wes, that it costs more. Now, I haven't seen any sort of real world calculator or anything like this. Do you know exactly if it does cost a significant amount more, or is it like compared to serverless? Because you've done a lot more with serverless than I have.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't run any edge functions myself. We'll go into some use cases in just a second, but I would assume so because you are now running that code in different environments. And it's a little bit more intensive to actually have to distribute that rather than just put it on one single server in Virginia. It now needs to be available on, I'm not sure how many servers they have around the world, these different companies, but they're often dozens of them around the world, right?
Yeah, totally.
I should also say for the APIs, Netlify's, and generally this is the same in other ones, they often will give you a set of APIs that are specific to that environment that allow you to deal with cookies. Netlify gives you geolocation. I know Cloudflare gives you that as well, which is really nice. And then I know Cloudflare Workers has an entire streaming API that's used to rewrite HTML if you need it. So that is some of the downsides. Another downside is there's a 1 meg limit on your functions. So again, you can't go NPM installing anything you want. You can use dependencies in them because, and same with Cloudflare Workers, but which ones you can use is sort of limited on, do they use standard web APIs that are available in these, or do they use Node.js APIs in almost, I would say in 80% of the use cases, they use a Node.js API or a browser API, and those aren't available in this environment. This is sort of like this third environment that we're talking about here. I call it a worker environment because if you think about in the browser, you have, what are those? Service workers. Service workers is like a third environment, right? It's not a browser. You have no browser APIs. You have no Node.js APIs. But you just have a subset, which is web APIs, available to you in that. There is a 1.2 second response time limit on a lot of these. So the response time varies. That 1.5 seconds is on Vercel's edge functions. So again, if you need to do anything that is larger than that, then that's probably not the use case for what an edge function is.
Yeah, so that does go back to the point of what we were saying earlier. It's not for like long running processes. It's not for the types of things that you're running your whole server on. It's more or less use case for functions.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're experimenting with any of these new technologies like edge functions or any of this stuff, you might want to utilize a service that helps you diagnose issues. Now, this actually is one of our sponsors today, which is LogRocket. And let's say you had an edge function that was failing. You're hitting it with a request. That function is coming back with some bad data or something along those lines. You could use LogRocket to see a video session replay of the user using your application, and it allows you to even see the network tab for when the user did that thing, meaning that you could diagnose issues on your production site from the network tab in LogRocket to see exactly why that data isn't coming back the way you expected. Because sometimes, you know, you think it's all working and then you forgot something here or there, and next thing you know, your data is not working right and your users are having a bad experience. Well, LogRocket is here to save you from users having bad experiences by making it full visibility into understanding exactly what's going on at any given point in your application, from performance metric tracking to errors and exceptions in a video scrollable replay. It's so very cool. So check it out at logrocket.com/syntax and you'll get 14 days for free. Thanks so much for LogRocket for sponsoring. Okay, so we have a little bit of upsides, downsides, what the heck they are. Now let's say, why might you use them? If they're not for a full-on server long-running process here, what's the use case in which you would want to use an edge function?
Yeah, I think Vercel does the best job at explaining them, and they rolled them out as middleware. Meaning that, and this is also, if you go back to the show on Cloudflare Workers where we explain what those are, Cloudflare Workers are often used as middleware. So what do we mean by that? So generally, a edge function will intercept a request. You've got your server on one end, you've got your user clicking a button on the other end, and in between your user clicking the button, sending the request all the way to your server, you can jump in between and intercept that request and do some work at any given time. And it could be the end result, or it could be simply just grab it, do some stuff, and pass it pass it along. So you're probably familiar with middleware from ExpressLand, where you have an endpoint and you have your initial request, and you can run code in between those, massage data, pass it along, whatever you need. So let's go through a huge list of possible use cases. This is, I've collected these from all the different vendors of edge functions, as well as I asked on Twitter, like, what do you use them for? Mm-hmm. And it seems to be like one of the biggest use cases are redirects, complex redirects. So if you have somebody coming to a URL, and like, let's say on this podcast, go to syntax.fm/ free shirt or something like that. And you needed to, right? Like, what needs to happen when somebody hits that URL? Okay, well, if they're from Canada, then you got to redirect them to the Canadian website. And if they're from the US, then you need to redirect them to the US website. And maybe you say, okay, well, that's a lead gen. You need to mark them in your Salesforce software as a possible lead. And you say, okay, well, if they're logged in, then I need to do something else with that or pass some additional information. And there's often a lot of like, oh my gosh, there's a lot of checking that needs to happen before you even actually redirect that person based on who they are, where they lived, if they're logged in, if they purchased, all the kinds of stuff like that, right? So with an edge function, you can intercept that URL and you don't have to put all that logic in like a route in your application. You can just throw that in an edge function and keep all that logic nice and tidy in a single edge function. And then from there, you can redirect the actual user.
That's neat. I've actually done a little bit of stuff like that before, especially when you get into complex redirects and DNS isn't cutting it for you. That seems like a good option for something like that.
Absolutely. Other things, there's edge rendering or server components. So somebody hits a URL. If you want to render out, it says React server components. So this could be literally anything that renders on the server. If there is no heavy dependencies on, like if it's just JavaScript at the end of the day, it will run in an edge function. And much of your client side stuff will run in that use case because I'm sure you hit that issues with like, oh, you have a browser API and you got to still take care of that. But if you have a server component that needs to be rendered, you can do that on the fly. That could be very handy because we've talked about in the past, if you want to be able to render out a component based on if somebody's logged in or not, you could do that in an edge function as well. You can go as far as you could render your entire website in an edge function, given that you hit those restraints. What's the word I'm looking
constraints?
For? Constraints. Yes. What a content rewrites. So if you want to be able to, this is one that I've used myself in Cloudflare Workers. I have a hosted cloud app where it has like screenshots and whatnot, right? And if some of the features they took out and some of the design I don't like, I can literally just intercept that request and then rewrite the HTML. You can fetch the actual HTML that the user would be returned. And then you have the HTML and you could do things like find and replace, add in your own JavaScript, tweak the CSS, replace every instance of their blue with your yellow or literally anything that you want. And you're right in between them. And that would be rather fast because you simply just need to fetch the end result and then stream the text into the user's browser as you are receiving it and replacing the stuff that you want.
Yeah, it seems like this is, I mean, a good use case is for anything that needs to step in between some of the bigger work and what the user's doing. Like you also have A-B testing listed here, which for those of you who don't know, A-B testing is basically where you're serving up two different versions of a feature, a component, or even an entire site or design to different people based on percentages. So that way you can track things like interaction from one design to the next design. You see this like all the time with like Netflix is like constantly serving up different interfaces to users, but also different thumbnails. I'm very confident that their team has like some solid math on which of the thumbnails that make a title more likely to be clicked and like what the difference there is. So if you want to have A-B testing, this could kind of step in the way and say, oh, you know, this build, we're going to send a certain percentage of the users to one build and a certain percentage of users to another build. That way we can track to see which of these builds has better interaction or is used in a way that's more like what we would want to have used.
Another good use case is authentication. So if you want to allow or deny access to a specific resource, whether that's an image or a JSON endpoint or just a logged in user, a authentication is a huge use case for these edge functions that you sort of, again, jump in the middle, check if they're logged in, and you can go ahead from there on out.
Yeah, it's funny. Okay, so you have one that you have geolocation written on here, and I was sort of sitting here like, I wonder what how you would use this with geolocation, but it does look like you had a tweet along with this. Just tried conditionally loading a script via geolocation. Pretty useful for stuff like cookie consent where laws differ. Now that is interesting. I have not even thought about that. So I was like going through my brain, like what could you possibly use geolocation here for? And this could very well be a good use case, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like you don't have to show those annoying cookie banners in countries that do not have cookie banners as a law. Like Canada does not have that as a law. So stop showing me your damn cookie banners. I don't care. You know?
Yeah, I hear
so
you.
So frustrating. So again, they'll give you a header. And in that case, you can just, you can immediately set the cookie of don't show the cookie banner. And then that, again, that logic doesn't have to go inside of your actual application because you just stick it in an edge function.
Yeah, where it will be processed faster than it would be.
Exactly. Localization, globalization is another big one. So you want to be able to translate things on the fly. Or for example, I have a coupon banner based on what country the user is actually in. You could throw that in there as you want. Browser support is a big one. You can detect the user's browser on the fly and either render out an older version of the website or none at all or a little banner. Again, that's one more thing that doesn't have to go inside of your... these seem really nice to me because I have a lot of these things in my application and they are in middlewares. But being able to stick them in an edge function of just their own thing, again, they run faster, closer to the user. They have all that information. Seems really nice.
Yeah, I'm interested in how you implement these into your application. So maybe we can talk a little bit about that as well. Are you good with the amount of use cases here that we've...
I was going to go through the tweet I asked on Twitter, like, what do you use edge compute function for? A lot of people said caching as well. So again, if you hit a endpoint, specifically like Cloudflare has, along with their functions, they also have their key value store. So let's say, for example, you are proxying an API and you're only allowed to hit that API, like the syntax API, you're only allowed to hit it once every minute or so, right? And if somebody were to fetch a list of episodes, likely if someone were to try to fetch a list of episodes the next minute, those are going to be the same. And it doesn't make sense to have to hit the database, query them all, render out the show notes and turn them. So you could just put in your own caching layer right in between there and just say, oh, well, somebody requested shows.json. Let me just pull that out of my cache instead of having to do all the intensive work. And that could possibly save you money in the long run because you're not having to run that compute over and over again.
Now there's also, so I mean, that gets me like thinking about like authentication, right? Whether that is just like straight up the user's data that's cached or when it's been authenticated. If you were going to like authenticate on the cloud function or the edge function, right? You're going to authenticate in the edge function. How would you personally thinking about this, like how would you authenticate the user and then send along the user authenticated data with that request going to your normal server? How would that work? Authentication with the edge?
I think like there's two things. You could check if they are authenticated and then either return a 4.0 whatever or not. And then the other one would be you can simply just set the cookies of that request so you can continue on to your application. So kind of seems interesting. And that's especially helpful if you are, if your serverless function is on many different servers, right? Because you don't, you got to think about the user is hitting one computer for the first request and then another computer for the second request. And if you want to be able to check if they're logged in between those two, that could be pretty handy as well. Yeah, we are, I should say, we're going to have some folks on from probably from Netlify, maybe from a couple others to talk about like what the use cases are, because it's pretty new to me as well. I've not implemented them in any fashion, but I've just been like, again, seeing them over and over again. I went down the rabbit hole and watched a bunch of videos for them.
Yeah, I know my wheels are turning a little bit. It's like, where could I even just try these out in my application just to give
totally.
It a try?
And you might be thinking like, okay, Wes, like all the stuff you're saying, I could just do that in a serverless function.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Or even just on a regular server full function, right? And I don't see the whole benefit. I think the benefit to this comes where, again, the speed and location at which these run is very important to your end game of your application.
Interesting. Okay, cool. So let's talk a little bit about how you would implement these things in your application. So we have different services, and I would say you're almost always going to be using someone's flavor of, I mean, by flavor, I mean someone specific. You have Netlify's edge functions. You would have Begin's edge functions. Begin has edge functions, right? I would assume they do.
I don't think so.
Yeah, maybe they don't. Maybe that was a bad assumption.
So I believe, and I'm not sure if this is totally true, that so there is Lambda edge functions, which is part of AWS. Mm-hmm. And I like most of the serverless offerings, they are built on top of Lambda or whatever Google's version or Microsoft version is of this specific thing. Generally, the AWS stuff is the best. And then things like Vercel and Netlify, I don't know if this is totally true or not, but I'm assuming that they are built on top of it because they add easier integrations, easier deploy, code sharing, environmental variable sharing, not having to use the awful AWS console to do anything. If you're using Next.js and all of a sudden you want to run a little bit of middleware, that's the middleware in Next.js when you deploy to Vercel will run on an edge function. And it's a pretty, pretty sweet to be able to just like say, all right, this is a middleware. This must run before you actually hit this API endpoint or the render out this page. Go ahead and run this code.
Cool. So it does feel like the workflow is very similar to how you would work with it serverless anyways. So if you're the type of person who's writing serverless functions, you're basically just having a different API for JavaScript or slightly different, I'd say, available API for you. And is that accurate?
Yeah, exactly. You just have to make sure that you're not using any of the APIs that are not allowed. I was just reading the Vercel docs on this. It says, a static page will deliver the same content to all visitors no matter where in the world they are, and it will be fast as is cached by the CDN. But this approach may not be viable if you want to deliver personalized content depending on, for example, where in the world a user is located. To give a user personalized experience, you can take advantage of server-side rendering to create dynamic content on each request of your site's page. This will enable you to offer different content to different people based on the location, authenticate them, or configure a language of your site. That makes sense. Like we talked about it earlier, we've had CDNs for static stuff for so long. Now this is kind of like a CDN for server rendered assets where you can go along. It's kind of neat that you can do this, and they're making it much faster because like the downside to generating it on every single request is it can be slow, especially if that server is very far from your actual user. Mm-hmm. So bringing that compute closer to the end user is sort of the idea behind all of this.
Cool. So Wes, did you get those taxes done? How did that work out for you? FreshBooks,
sure,
they come in handy?
Did. I'm so in such good shape that I've already done my Q1 remittances for my HST, which is our, do you have a special name for your tax that like you buy something for a dollar and it's like $1.13 or whatever?
Sales tax.
Yeah. So like we call it HST here in Ontario. Oh,
that's weird.
Yeah. It's different in every province. It's different in every state there too, as well. Right. What percentage is it in Colorado?
Honestly, I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember what it was in Michigan, or at least I did at the time. Colorado. I know we have like super low property taxes, but let me see about sales tax. I don't know if we have low sales tax. I know we have low property tax, but
2.9%. You kidding me? It's 13%. Oh, depending on local municipalities, tax rate can be as high as 11.2%.
Yeah, Denver's is 8.8.
Okay. It's 13%. It used to be 15 when I was a kid. Anyways, I have to collect that based on, if you're Canadian, I have to collect the HST and GST and PST based on like what province you live in. That would actually be a really good use case for Edge Functions is displaying the user's localized sales tax on a server rendered page.
Yeah. Oh, I like that little pop noise.
Yeah. Boom. So that's a pain in the butt. And then I also, anytime I pay out sales tax to any of the vendors, because I buy stuff, then I get that back because I'm a business. Huge pain in the butt. FreshBooks makes it so easy. I just have to put in all my expenses, log all the HST. I have them auto put in from my credit card. It is awesome. And then my accountant can just pop into my FreshBooks, grab all that information, and then he knows whether I have to pay out or get back HST, depending on if I collected or spent more in that quarter. It's awesome. Check it out. FreshBooks.com/syntax. It's going to get you a 30-day free trial. Thank you, FreshBooks, for sponsoring.
Sick. Okay. So some of this stuff we've already covered a little bit. Like what are Edge Functions not used for? They're not used for a long-running process, anything that needs the entire Node.js API, anything that's going to take a long time. Actually, that's interesting that it might be like a neat case for WASM. If you have a function that's like slightly taking too long, rewrite it in another language. Could you use WASM? Yeah.
Hey, I wonder if you could put WASM in an Edge function.
Huh.
Yeah. That'd be kind of cool. Or like at the very least, like an Edge function could kick off a process. Like for example, like a image. If somebody requests an image and you don't have a smaller version of that, I don't think you can stick around and wait for that image to be compressed and resized. So in that case, you could just forward them to the original image. But you could also kick off a little sub process, maybe in a serverless function, to say, all right, well, this one didn't get resized, but the next one, go ahead and resize it and compress it and whatnot, so that the next person that hits this one, we can serve them up a cache version of it. And that's sort of an approach in Edge Functions is you just kick off asynchronous work that will, unfortunately not for this time, but or we'll email you when it's ready or send you a notification when it's ready, but we're not going to stick around in this request and wait for that work to be done.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. So what companies offer this? Cloudflare. We have Cloudflare Workers, Netlify Edge Functions. We have Supabase using Dino, Vercel, AWS Lambda. I'm sure there's others, right?
The big one that Netlify landed it the other day, a couple months ago, Vercel rolled it out with Next.js middleware. You're going to start seeing, I think, a lot more companies start to roll this out now that they've got their serverless function story in place. Now they're starting to offer up Edge Functions, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So they thing about them is that they're all a little bit different. And I don't know that if you were to code like a Netlify Edge Function that you'd be able to easily, but I don't think it would be a straight cutover to some of the other vendors, right? Like you'd have to, it's not just straight Node.js where you can run it wherever you want. And again, that's the sort of, you give that up in exchange for being able to run this as fast as you possibly can.
Yeah. Hey, I found just Googling around just now, I found a host called Azion, AZION.com.
Ooh.
And they advertise a lot of cloud. And you know what? This landing page is pretty decent for understanding cloud functions in like a kind of an overview way, or Edge Functions, where it says, you know, the cloud is not enough. Here's why the cloud is not enough. And then talks quite a bit about that and what their services provide, some use cases for it. So this is actually a really pretty nice landing page for
Edge caching.
Yeah, getting a edge little functions, understanding here.
The entire Edge network. Oh, this is cool. They have 3,300 ASNs directly connected. ASN is a like an ISP, right? Like every single host that like Linode would have an ASN number, and Cloudflare would have a ASN number, and your ISP from your that you get your internet from will have an ASN number. So they are connected directly to those.
I've never heard of this company, and it seems like they have some decently big clients. So interesting.
Cool, cool, cool. Yeah, it seems that when I started dipping into it, it seemed like the big boys were coming out. Like I watched a couple of videos from IBM, and Red Hat had some stuff on it, and like it seems like this. Okay, wow, this is getting past my little React website and into some like, wow, this infrastructure, you know?
Yeah, infrastructure. It's infrastructure week. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, well, I think that's it for Edge Functions. Do you have anything else?
No. Let's move on to some sick picks. I'm amazed that we can do an hour on Edge Functions, because I was like, it should just be Hasty or Tasty, but there's a lot to talk about.
There's a lot to talk about, and I think there's a lot of confusion around it, when it's useful, when it's not useful, who it's even for. Like, are you building a portfolio with Edge Functions? Yeah, you know, those types of the questions. So, yeah, okay, this is the part of the show that we talk about sick picks. There are things that we pick that are sick, sick as in that we like them, not sick as in bad. So, Wes, I have a sick pick today for a podcast that I've been finding to be pretty interesting, and you might find this to be interesting too. This seems like it's something that's up Wes's alley. It's called Patented, The History of Inventions. Ooh. And they do about like 45 minutes on the history of specific inventions. And I found every episode that I've listened to be extremely informed. Like, I don't know if you've noticed this trend, but there's definitely a trend in podcasts lately where it'll be like Wondery's podcast about things you didn't know, and here's like two people who know nothing about the thing they're talking about it. Does this like Edge work? Functions? Whatever, let's do our quick Google search and then share some biased opinions. And what, like, I really hate that, where it's like all about the entertainment product aspect of it, where there's you know. But this is, I found to be very extremely well researched, and he brings a subject on or a guest on who's like a subject matter expert, but not like a, you know, quote unquote influencer subject matter expert, like a literal expert talking about various things. Like, I listened to one about the invention of the spacesuit, and they did a lot of talking about not only materials, but designs and things that didn't work and constraints that they had to work in. They designed the first ones, and they went to the moon, and moon dust got in the zippers. So then in round two, they were like, we have to design them without zippers in these certain spots. Like, it was really pretty interesting. There's one on the treadmill, the atomic bomb, steam engines, military drones, breakfast cereal, tanks, the number zero, the origins of the number zero. But it's been fascinating, and it's well researched, which is always a good thing for me. Not sensationalized or anything like that, just straight up info.
Wow, awesome. I'm going to sick pick something that I sick picked, I think, 2-3.5 years ago, and that is pre-cut parchment paper sheets. So I'm back to talk about pre-cut parchment paper again, because at 3.5 years ago, I sick picked this, and I bought a pack of 500 for like $20-$25 on Amazon. And if you don't know, parchment paper, when you put something in the oven, you're roasting some vegetables or making cookies or whatever you want, putting parchment paper down, cutting it with the little roll, it curls up. It's not perfect size. Such a pain in the butt. So you get standard size sheets, cookie sheets. We call them cookie sheets here in Canada. They're called sheet pans.
Baking sheet.
Baking sheet. 12x16 is your standard like household. It's called a half sheet. And man, it's the best. You pull one out, throw it on. It lays nice and flat, and you crumple it up. And I learned they are, you can put them in the green bin here in Canada, which I did not know, which is amazing.
I should look that up. I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah. Obviously check your local municipality. But I've been throwing them in the garbage. So sorry about that, turtles. and they are so good. Just like there's just so many things in my life that I'm like, I'm so glad I did this, and I need to keep telling people about it. So I posted on Instagram. Everyone's like, oh my goodness, I need this. And people say, I switched to pre-cut parchment like 2 years ago when you first talked about it. And it's been a game changer for me. So let me tell you, if you are still using rolls of parchment paper, finish that one up and then buy the pre-cut stuff on Amazon because it is the best.
Yeah, cool. Well, that's fun. Shameless plugs. Wes, do you have anything to shamelessly plug? I should mention, by the way, I did get those parchment sheets and they are as fantastic as you have been talking about.
That's the best. WesBoss.com/courses, a list of all the courses that I offer. If you want to learn a thing or two about JavaScript, HTML, CSS, web development in general, databases, you name it. Got all kinds of really good stuff there, free and paid. Send your friends there as well if they are learning JavaScript from scratch. WesBoss.com/courses. Use coupon code SYNTAX. $10 off.
Sick. I'm going to shamelessly plug leveluptutorials.com. I have a new course out on JavaScript browser APIs where we dive into some interesting APIs in the browser. Now, obviously, we can't cover them all, but we do get some practical ones where you're looking at device sensors and things like that, but then also some really fancy brand new ones like the file system API. We build in this course in two videos, we build basically something that allows you to explore your own file system in browser, open up a file, and in our case, we open up an SVG file. We modify that file in a text area in the browser, and we click save on a save button in the browser, and it saves your local file. It's pretty amazing, and I was kind of shocked at just how easy and approachable all of this was. So if you want to learn that type of thing and more, check out leveluptutorials.com. Sign up to become a pro and get access to all of that and more.
Beautiful. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We will catch you on Friday.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.